Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Folks, you remember me talking about 9/11 many times. In fact, in memory of those that ran, not from, but to the challenge, to the danger, in the hopes of saving as many lives as possible, was the motivation for me to start my new career on radio, in radio, on 9/11, and just celebrated my second anniversary. I felt that strongly about it. It was a life-changing event for me as a law enforcement leader, one in which I was at the forefront here locally because Sheriff Harry Lee actually was overseas and was unable to get back into the country because of them grounding all of the flights, and he was gone for a period of about 2 weeks post 9/11, still trying to get back into the country, and had to come in through Canada. And it was one of those moments that I'll never forget in my life and where I was, and we talked about that on 9/11. Well, today we have the pleasure of having Neil Navarro, who's the event director for the fourth annual New Orleans 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb. That's going to happen right here at 400 Porter Street, the building that we're sitting in today, right now. And they have a walk afterwards. We're going to talk about that. But we're also joined by Tim Duffy, a firefighter from the New York Fire Department, as well as Joe Tarillo, a retired New York Fire Department firefighter as well. And in Tim's case, an iconic picture of him on a Harley going through the debris just before reaching the location of the second tower when that started to fall. So, gentlemen, let me thank you for your service for many years. Thank you for blessing us with your presence down here in support of this memorial stair climb. One that has a lot of energy around it, a lot of emotion around it, a lot of passion around it every year. I've seen it twice. Always look forward to it. And, you know, you've got the paparazzi out here taking pictures of y'all as well, guys. So, but let me just say welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Neil, tell us about the event tomorrow.
So, like you said, tomorrow will be our fourth anniversary. You know, I'm humbled, to say the least, to know that two legends, we have another one here in town as well, want to come down to be part of our event. It means the world. You know, being a firefighter, I'd be in the same position. I would have ran to those buildings just as fast. And like I said, it's our way of remembering 9/11. 343 fires, 60 police officers, 8 EMS, and those in counting. So, now they got that out the way. Yeah, our event, it's our fourth anniversary. You know, this year we sold out in 3.5 hours, all 411 spots. So I am, once again, I'm humbled, I'm honored to be a part of this. And it's just a great event. You know, it is something where we honor our local fallen as well. And it's, you know, you have to see it in person. Like you said, it's something that pictures don't do it justice. You have to come out and experience, you know, everyone remembers exactly where they were 18 years ago. And I mean, yes, 18 years ago, some of the guys that are on the department now weren't even born yet. So that's our mission, to make sure that those two words that we made a commitment 18 years ago continues to live on.
This was an occurrence that changed this country in so many different ways. I mean, when you think about the creation of the Department of Homeland Security as a result of it, really the whole way that we collect intelligence, the role that firefighters play now in the collection of intelligence, which they kind of did very little of that, you know, prior to this event, and the way that we train now and what we're looking for and what we do day in and day out. So when you make the point that, you know, some of these young men and women that are coming on the force today, they weren't even alive then. I think it really is important to remember and define it, memorialize it for the purposes of why things are today. And I know, Tim, you have taken on PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, as it relates to this. And, you know, we just came out of congressional hearings where we're talking about so many of your fellow friends and firefighters in New York who are suffering physiologically as a result of the dust and the debris and not having the ability to have breathing apparatus the whole time during that event. But we never even really talked much about the mind side of this.
Yeah. When I heard the 22 a day number, that the 22 vets a day were committing suicide, it kind of blew my mind. Being a Navy veteran, it just befuddled me. And then I heard that if you were banged up enough to get on the list at the VA for a service dog, it was a 2-year wait. And I just thought that was crazy with the shelters being full of dogs. So all the guys with the PTSD are the guys at the end of that line who are not even on that list, you know. So I just started pulling dogs out of shelters, looking at their temperament being the number one thing to create a buddy for these guys. And we average between 3 and 21 days on average on hooking a guy up with a dog. And I've got dog and soldier teams in Wisconsin, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Jersey, New York. And it just, I almost feel selfish doing it because I get so much out of it, you know. All these kids that were, you know, in high school or college and gave up their dream of being whatever it was, electrician, plumber, doctor, to go give some payback for the punch in the nose we took that day. It's, you know, why I do it. We'll take care of these kids if the government doesn't.
Now, both you guys worked the event, and Joe, how long were you in the fire service?
I was in the fire service for 25 years with the New York City Fire Department.
And, you know, from the day of to the day after to months after to years after, and you look back, when you reflect, what are the changes that really strike you the most? And I know that you're probably still interacting with many of your fellow firefighters and the challenges that they're still facing today.
Well, the thing is that, you know, as one of the few survivors who was buried and declared dead for 3 days, and with all the injuries that I had, and my recuperation was a long, long time, especially the brain injury, that threw me for a loop. And In my recuperation, all I wanted to do was to get back to the firehouse. But in 2004, the fire department made a decision because of the brain injury that I would never go back again. And, of course, they forced me into a retirement in 2004. And at that point, my life was changed and rearranged. I didn't know where I was going to go from that point. And I decided I'd set out on a mission to make this country the reunited states of America, and to resurrect patriotism and go around the country, try to bring people together long before Donald Trump wanted to make our country great again. So we took this big American flag and we're going around the country holding all these events for patriotism. And then at that point, it was very important for me to travel and speak on all these events that people are hosting, like Neil right here, and to be able to lend support to the members of our fire departments and first responders, but also to make sure that everybody honors every man and woman who ever served our nation from the days of our founding father, George Washington, and to support them in every single way, because you know, of all the things that we hold sacred in this country and all the people that we honor and call heroes, I mean, they are the real heroes and the only heroes, you know, people that serve for our benefit and those that were carried to the cemetery. People like me, I'm not a hero. I was a first responder and a survivor. And Timmy will say the same thing. You know, the heroes went to the cemetery.
Now, both of you guys were buried in the rubble of the South, was it the South Tower?
North Tower.
North Tower.
No, I was right outside underneath the South Tower when it came down. I started running, but I didn't make it. A piece of steel hit me in the back of the head and split the back of my head wide open. And all huge slabs of concrete were just hitting my body. And all my ribs were broken. My left arm was snapped in half. My neck and spine was crushed. I was bleeding internally. And I was suffocating under the tons of steel and concrete, buried with all these other people.
And they didn't find you till 3 days later?
No, they actually found me later that day, but I was transported to a hospital by boat. I woke up in an operating room. I was in another state. I was in New Jersey, and I was wearing another firefighter's coat. and we write our name on the inside. It said Tommy McNamara. So for 3 days, they didn't know where I was until there were rumors there were people in other states.
Oh, okay. I got confused. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that story now.
Yeah, right. I was actually on my way to a press conference that morning. People have heard the story, and when they hear it, they want to hear it 100 more times. I had been working with a company called Fisher-Price Toys back in January of 2001 to develop a new action figure, which was going to be a New York City firefighter, a kid's rescue hero.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And I chose the date of 9/11.
I was a big G.I. Joe guy.
Oh, so you understand exactly. I mean, they had other rescue heroes besides this new rescue hero, Billy Blazes, a New York City firefighter. And make a long story short, I helped them design it. And we were going to introduce it on September 11, 2001 at 9 o'clock in the morning because 911 is the emergency phone number in New York City. I thought for the first time we should have a 911-themed safety day, talk about fire prevention and fire survival, and introduce this kid's new rescue hero, Billy Blazes, a New York City firefighter. And on my way to the press conference, the first plane hit the tower, and I don't know what to do. Do I go to Rockefeller Center for the press conference, or I make a left and make my way to my firehouse where I began my career across the street from the towers? And that's what I did. I took off my dress uniform, borrowed a set of firefighting clothing, ran out of the firehouse, and I had to run past the South Tower to get to the North Tower.
Right.
And as I was running past the South Tower, I heard a roar, and I looked up, and the second jet came right over my head. And at that point, I realized, A, we were under a terrorist attack. The second thing I said to everybody that I encountered at the scene was that we're not going to get to the people above the point of impacts. They're not getting down, and we're not getting to them. And I said the buildings are going to collapse. And people looked at me. They're like, what? I said, these buildings are going to collapse. And nobody could understand why I was saying that. It didn't seem logical, right? But nobody knew before I was a firefighter. I went to school, and I was studying architecture and engineering in school long before I became a firefighter. And two of my professors in college were working for the concrete contractor on the Twin Towers, so they could take us on a class trip as engineering students to study the towers when they were going up. So I knew those towers more as an engineer than a firefighter, and I knew that they would not withstand that amount of fire.
As I recall, the load was on the perimeter of the building as opposed to spread across from the outside to the inside of the building or something like that, correct?
Well, what happens is, you know, I do a whole presentation on the design, the collapse of the Twin Towers. It's probably, you'll probably learn more in my presentation, I'm not bragging, than you'll ever heard from anybody else. And it's all very straightforward on how I explain how the buildings were designed. But once the plane struck the building, and any time a plane strikes any building, I'm going to tell you right now, the potential for collapse is always going to be imminent.
Right.
But in the Twin Towers, the way they were designed, they were very a lightweight steel design building. But there was just way too much structural damage from my estimate for that building to remain, you know, the way it was. And to me, it was so obvious. I just didn't think that they were going to collapse as soon as they did. I thought around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon that they would begin to collapse. But in less than an hour and 55 minutes, the second tower was already coming down. And I was right outside underneath it. I started running, but I didn't make it.
Seven came down around 3, though.
Yeah,
seven came
yeah.
down to 5:20 in the evening.
Was it 5:20?
Right. Yeah, we got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. 260-1870 or text 870-870. Folks, you're going to want to come out 400 Poydras 8 a.m. tomorrow morning for the 4th annual New Orleans Memorial Stair Climb to memorialize and pay tribute to the 343 firefighters, 60 law enforcement officers, and 8 emergency medical technicians who made the ultimate sacrifice on that day, September 11, 2001. And sadly, there are those that are still making that sacrifice today. This is an event and an incident that is not over. It's not over for many. And as you watch the congressional hearings just not too many months ago, if that didn't touch your heart and if that didn't pull a string, nothing will. And the fact that we still have folks that are making that sacrifice today, so many years later. Gentlemen, I've seen the dust, you know, in the pictures, and I'm sure that doesn't do any appreciation for it. And we now know that so many of the brothers and sisters that you were with that day are still losing their lives today. And, excuse me, getting a little choked up here. I've actually followed many of them over the years and the struggles, and I'm sure you do too. I'm sure many of them are your friends. It kind of struck me that we even had this conversation in Congress still about this issue and about the trials and tribulations that folks are having to go through still today, you know, especially for the kids and for the spouses of those families. Tell us a little bit about that struggle that y'all have as well.
Well, between the police, fire, EMS, the iron workers, and, you know, we're averaging, I think, every day and a half, we're losing somebody. It was just a couple of months ago, I think we lost three guys on a Wednesday, you know, three firemen. So it's just, you know, you do the best you can and hope that, you know, your clock gets dragged out, you know, because it's coming, but, you know, it's a matter of time.
What was it like, you know, when you tell me the story about, you know, you attempted to get up several times, Tim, and, you know, you kept getting knocked down, and then you ultimately had to crawl out, all the while that this dust was so thick, I think you put it that it was sucking every ounce of fluid in your throat, your nose, your mouth, and it felt like you were choking to death at the same time.
Yeah, it felt like I was literally stuck inside of a bag of cement. It was clumping up in my mouth, and I was swallowing clumps, but it was on the way down, it was still wicking the moisture out of my mouth, you know, my eyes, my ears, my nose. It was just I was starting to suffocate, and you know, I was lucky enough to get it to where I got to, and I actually got into the Brooks Brothers there on Church of Liberty, and I did a preliminary search on the first floor, ran up the escalator, did a preliminary search on the second floor, came down, and I ran into Billy Quick, who passed away about 3 or 4 years ago of cancer. He played on the football team. He was a big guy, and I heard the sucking, the so I knew somebody was in the space with a mask, and I ran over to him, took a couple of hits, and you know, then I just took a pack of handkerchiefs off a shelf, stuffed a couple in my pocket, and put one around my face, and it helped a little bit, but it really wasn't that great.
You had the same experience?
Yeah, I mean, I was physically buried under that huge dust cloud. There's a really good picture of it, and when I was buried with all these other people in the darkness, there was nothing. You couldn't see, and you couldn't breathe, and then I was in the middle of all these fires, and all the people that had been screaming, they turned into cries and then silence. And one by one, I guess they had all died. And I was still breathing. And then I realized all these fires were all around me. And I was actually hoping that I was going to suffocate to death before I burnt to death. And I had a flashback to the day I was sworn into the fire department. And I remembered taking a vow that I'd be willing to lay down my life so that somebody else might live on becoming a new fireman in New York City, and all I kept on saying to myself, you never thought you were going to live up to this vow. Like, why did you ever take this vow seriously? You always thought, like, one day you'd retire and get a pension and go fishing and play golf, and I'm like, today it's all over. And I'm saying, why didn't somebody tell me, like, 4 hours ago when I got out of bed that today was the end? And I just asked God, you know, I did something I hadn't done in a long time. I closed my eyes and I said a prayer. I didn't want to die angry. I actually thanked God for my career, and I was accepting my fate, and I just asked him to please take care of my wife and kids because they're not going to accept the news when they find out that I didn't make it.
I heard a lot of stories in the aftermath of the uncertainty of the wife and the kids and Tron, and in your case, and I now remember your case. I read about your case because there were it was a long period of time before anybody knew because you had the wrong jacket on.
Exactly.
Do y'all talk about that still?
I do, you know, because
I'm talking about with your wife and your family.
You know, not really. I'd rather them not know what's going on inside of me. I've been hiding it for a long time. First of all, because I didn't want to scare them. Number two, I didn't want them to think that I was weak. And it was also something that was very difficult for me to talk about. But I realized that after I came out of this dark place for the first 10 years, actually I had been very angry that I had survived. And I know that might sound hokey, might sound weird, but I'm admitting it for the first time. I actually couldn't understand why God took 343 firefighters and let them all march up to heaven together and left me behind. Like, why wasn't I good enough to be in that number? You know, like Louis Armstrong says, when the saints go marching in, I want to be in that number. And how come I wasn't in that number? I mean, now, you know, I'll live the rest of my life and I'll never be remembered as a hero when I pass away. But those 343 firefighters are the ultimate heroes. And I felt like, well, why couldn't I have been
with
them?
I wouldn't sell yourself short. I'm going to be honest with you.
No, but people have told me everywhere I go, and I speak on behalf of charities, people have told me, every single person, everywhere I go, they say, Joe, God spared your life for a reason.
Absolutely.
You got a bigger mission in this world. And I'm hoping that they're all true.
Well, I think you being here today, willing to share this story, is part of that mission. And you're being here today and making an impact in other people's lives, especially in young firefighters, you know, that are coming in. I mean, I know we're all sitting here with tears in our eyes, right? I mean, this is a purpose, and there's a reason.
Well, you'd be surprised how many young people that I meet around the country that have told me, when they were babies at the time and now they're 20, 21 years old, how many of these young people in our country have decided to either go into the military or to become a first responder because what happened on 9/11. So, you know, it was what happened in that incident and the way everybody rose to the challenge. It really has inspired a lot of the young kids in this country to want to go into a service where they provide, protection, whether it's in the military or as first responders. And to me, that's a good feeling, you know. I love when I meet a kid and they tell me that.
Let's go to the talk lines. Chuck out in Slide L in line one. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell. I appreciate it. And thank you for your service. But gentlemen, the former sheriff there stole a little bit of my thunder. Do not sell yourself short. You are heroes. And you knew what you were headed into. Every one of those guys who passed away, you owe it to them to continue to carry on their story as well, for their families and their kids and everybody involved. I'm one of these early crashers when it comes to going to bed. And they had a special about 120 minutes or something like that was on History Channel. And I could not take my eyes off of you guys. And I watched it. The courage and the strength that it took and the looks on your faces to go into those buildings. And I'm going to tell you, I don't want to sell anyone short here because police officers do it all the time. You know, they're the guys who run in the fire. They don't run away from it. The guys that are military know what they're going to engage when they're heading in. And this was, 19 years ago, right? 18 years ago, excuse me. And I remember to this day, it still chokes me up. To this day, it's the only day in my entire life I ever felt hatred. And I'll tell you, it's a feeling I hope I don't think I've ever gotten over it, but I never want to experience that feeling again. And it's a day that it will continue to live in for me, and you were a part of that. And you, like I said, you're part of the guys who have to carry that story forward. So I just wanted to tell you, we all appreciate your service as Americans in general. We appreciate what you walked into. I know there's a lot of different political, you know, positions out there, but even the ones who are the most radical, you know, they're the ones who actually, I think, even in turn will appreciate what you guys actually have been through. So I'll just shut up and listen from here on. And I just want to say thank you. And I think I can't speak on an entire city's behalf, but I think in this particular case, I don't think there's anybody else out there who would not say thank you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate
it. Chuck, thank
it.
You so much for your comments. We truly appreciate it. We're going to get to a break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. Folks, we are joined by two heroes, Tim Duffy and Joe Tarillo, retired from the New York Fire Department. They were there that day. They were buried that day. Miraculously, they both lived that day to carry on, to tell the story, to remember all of those that made the ultimate sacrifice. And tomorrow, the memorial in paying tribute to 343 firefighters, 60 law enforcement officers, and 8 EMS, EMT technicians, or emergency medical technicians, 8 a.m. here at 400 Poydras. They'll make that climb. Also, there's going to be a walk of silence in honor of the 2,566 civilians that made the sacrifice and perished on that day as well. And they'll go down Magazine Street to Calliope, take a right on Calliope to Camp, and take a right on Camp back down to Poydras and finish back at the corner of Poydras and Magazine Street, right outside of this building as well. It is a walk of silence. It's a very compelling walk. It is one that's very necessary to remember all of the others. The ones that I know these guys think about all the time that they didn't get to, that they didn't save, I've heard that story told so many times that they feel as though, in some cases, that they let them down. But we know that in many cases that challenge was very much insurmountable. Joe and Tim, both of you have taken on a different walk in life in the aftermath of this. You're telling your story, and Tim, you have the one soldier, one dog, one team. We were talking off air about how many young men and women were compelled to enter the military in the aftermath of this event. And when you think about just this event and how it impacted so many people's lives that wasn't even in contact with this event, I'm sure you guys hear a lot of those stories as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible. I was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was traveling the Northwest for the Tunnel to Towers. That organization is named after Stevie Silla, who went to probie school together with me, and we went to our first firehouse together. So I was traveling the country speaking for them in the Northwest, and when I decided to do my one soldier, one dog thing in the summer of 17, I did a 26,000-mile, 12-week trip around the country, and this one stop of mine, I was actually just on the bike tooling around the mountains, and I stopped at a Red Barn saloon for a burger and a beer, and these two girls came up, saw my motorcycle, and she says, "Wow, that's a nice old school bike." I was like, "Yeah, thank you very much." She goes, "Are you lost?" She's looking at my license plate from New York. "Are you lost?" I said, "No." And so I told her what I was doing, and she says, "Wow, you should go say hello to my husband and shake his hand." I said, "Well, where is he?" And she pointed to the black Suburban, blacked out windows. And I had seen this guy in a wheelchair come wheeling by me with the beard, and to me, he just was screaming Special Forces guy. So I wanted to shake this guy's hand. I'm Navy. I figure he's a Marine. So I went walking over the Suburban. I walked up, and I said, "Go Navy," into the window. And I spooked him, and he turned to me, and he said, "Go Navy." He was a SEAL, and he lost his legs in Afghanistan, Bo Wade. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And so I told him what I told his wife, and I said, "You know, I'm here with the Tunnel to Tower. I was here with the Tunnel to Towers. We built homes for guys." And he put his hand, like, kind of up into the window in my face. He said, "You guys built my home." And just in the middle of nowhere, and I met this kid who went in after 9/11, lost his legs, and here I am, you know, with my own organization, but the time before there with the Steel and Silver Foundation, Tunnel to Towers, and we built the guy's home. They're smart homes for guys with, you know.
No, absolutely. It's a great story. It has been a very successful organization, yeah. And one that's obviously very necessary.
I'm sorry, but the 93 cents out of every dollar they take in goes back to the soldiers, and that's what I emulated in my organization. Like Neil's organization, nobody, him included, nobody takes a dime.
Yeah.
So I'm totally volunteer, and every penny we take in, you know, goes back in some way, shape, or form to what we're doing.
It's amazing the cohesive group, too, nationally, because I've talked to so many folks, both in NYPD and NYFD and in the aftermath of this. Joe, you were doing the superhero thing that day. I don't know how that ultimately – that's kind of a weird message from up above, the way that whole thing played out for you when you're meeting with Mattel and, you know, the development of a superhero. And it just so happens you picked that day.
Back on the premonition. I mean,
from the previous July, right?
Right, July of 2001. It was at the end of the month. What happened was actually – in the beginning of July is when the mold and prototype was complete, and they wanted us to look it over before it went into mass production. So we looked it over, and there were certain things that we thought they should kind of change and tweak a little bit if, in fact, they wanted him to be a signature New York City firefighter. Not that we're any different or better, but there's certain things that are signature about New York City firefighters. So one of the
they needed a little more girth.
Well, you know what? So one of the executives, one of the executives of Fisher Price, a woman by the name of Lori Orovec, I had developed a nice relationship with her over the project. She says, "Okay, Joe." She says, "So tell me, what's a signature about a New York City firefighter?" And I said, "Well, Lori, there are certain things that I can't tell you, but there are certain things that I can tell you." She says, "Well, tell me the things you can tell me." I says, "Well, we have big mustaches and we smoke cigars." And she says, "Well, we're not going to put a cigar in Billy Blaze's hand." So she took out a black Sharpie and she drew a big mustache on Billy Blaze's. She says, "You know, Joe, he needs to look more like you." So they remolded Billy Blaze's with the big mustache. And that took about 3 weeks. So now it's the end of July. We looked it over. We agreed to go into mass production. And they want to have a big press conference. And so I picked the month of October because it's fire prevention month. I thought it was very apropos to the project. And so did they. But it was too close to Christmas and the holiday season. They need to get Billy Blaze on the mark a little bit sooner. And so I couldn't think of another date in between July and October. And I said, "You know, 911 is an emergency phone number in New York City. Why don't we have like a 911 themed safety day?" Because I at that time, I was the director of the fire department's public education program. I was in charge of spreading the messages of prevention and survival in New York City. And I thought that would be a great, you know, appropriate tie to this project. Right. And so did they. So I said, "Let's do it on September 11th. You know, it's going to be a 911 themed safety day." And he says, "Oh, my God, that's a great novel idea." So at 9 o'clock in the morning, all the TV stations and radio reporters and camera people and the mayor, the city council, the fire commissioner, all the Fisher-Price executives were waiting in Rockefeller Center for me to introduced the new rescue hero, a likeness of a New York City firefighter called Billy Blazes. And at that very moment, as I was on my way to the press conference, a jet hits the tower, and then I got to make an impromptu decision. What do I do? Do I go to the press conference, or would I make my way to my firehouse where I started my career across the street from the towers? And that's exactly what I did. I was there at 9 o'clock. 3 minutes later, I had a set of firefighting clothing running past the South Tower when the second jet came over my head. And at that point, I realized this is a terrorist attack.
Yeah. A lot of coincidences on that day.
Yeah,
I mean, when you read through the stories, I've read, you know, several books about so many different coincidences of near misses of people that were supposed to be in that building and weren't in that building.
And vice versa.
And vice versa, that had no connection to that building.
No connection at all.
And were brought to that building on that. And it's compelling when you read through these stories.
The stories are amazing. I get to hear all of them because I'm a tour guide at Ground Zero. I was one of the first tour guides back in 2006, and now there's like 350 people that do it. And there's a woman that volunteers with me as a tour guide. She worked on the 105th floor of the North Tower. The night before 9/11, she was out shopping and she found a pair of shoes she had been looking for a long time. It was the perfect pair of shoes. She found them and tried them on, but they seemed to be about a half a size too small. But she liked them so much and wanted them so much, she bought the shoes anyway. And anyway, the next morning she gets up on September 11th, she puts the shoes on, and she lived in New Jersey on the other side of the Hudson River from the Twin Towers, and she would take the train that went underneath the Hudson River and brought you right to the towers.
Right.
And so she left her apartment that morning, and as she was walking about three blocks later, she realized the shoes really are too tight, and she made a decision to go back home and change the shoes. And in doing so, she missed the last train that made it to the towers. She would have been on the 105th floor and wouldn't have survived. So for the sake of buying an ill-fitting pair of shoes, she's alive today.
It's unbelievable when you hear these stories. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. On a text line, my nephew's one who became a Marine, went to Iraq, and now is suffering with PTSD. Another text, God bless you, fellas. This is an event that a lot of people have tried to make it go away and have fought against remembering this. And folks, if you want to fight that too, the 4th Annual New Orleans Memorial Stair Climb tomorrow, Saturday, September 21st, 8 a.m. right here at 400 Poydras, pays tribute to the 343 firefighters, 60 law enforcement officers, and 8 emergency medical technicians. And then there's also the Walk of Silence in the honor of the 2,566 civilians that perished on that very same day. Tim, you were just telling a story. I want you to tell that story, if you don't mind. I know you were choked up, but it's amazing how many lives were touched and, you know, how so many people still remember.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was helping a buddy out. I was working Sunday afternoons at O'Hara's Pub. It's right behind the firehouse, which was right across the street from the South Tower. And we had this kid from Boston who was a bar back. And one Sunday afternoon, he came up to me and asked me if he could shake my hand. And I looked at him and said, "Why, did I clean some dishes you were supposed to clean, you little knucklehead?" And he says, "No." And his face was sullen. It didn't smile at all. And he said, "No, I just want to thank you for finding my dad." He said, excuse me, he said, "You guys gave my mom my dad to bury, and I just want to thank you for that." And it kind of took me back to in particular, the months of February, March, when it was pretty brutal down there with the snow and the rain, how I would just keep telling myself that you're giving family closure. You're giving a family closure, because we were digging. We were kind of an intense team. A boss by the name of Tommy Gardner had called me up. We had worked together for a little while, and he was putting a digging team together of veterans only, and it was five guys and him. And so I got to work with some of the biggest legends on the job, Eric Wiener and B.A. and Mark from the Rat House. And, you know, it was just an honor to be with them. So we would dig for like 3 hours and take a half-hour break, and it was incredible.
A lot of people don't recognize and realize, and that's why I wanted you to tell the story about the after work. Today has been one of the most special days for me on radio. Thank y'all.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.